you're a Civil War historian. Isn't giving aid to the rebels in Syria now kind of like jumping aboard and helping the Confederates in late 1864?
Well, you know, on some levels, yes, but one difference is the Confederates weren't Islamist extremists and terrorists, you know, although they had a few guys that behaved badly. But, I mean, really, when I hear all this ranting and raving in Washington about, you know, we've got to help the rebels, tell me what the end state is. Okay, you help the rebels who are permeated with Islamist terrorists, Al-Qaeda clones, Al-Qaeda allies. At this point, they weren't initially, but they are now. Let's say we support the rebels, give them heavy weapons, give them, John McCain gets his no-fly zone, which essentially would involve U.S. aircraft flying close air support for Al-Qaeda. I mean, this is nutty. But, okay, we do all that. Assad's driven out. Then what? Is it going to be magic, like in Iraq, where everything turns out perfectly, or everybody strews the streets with roses? I mean, the rebels.
Can I make a prediction? It'll be like Libya.
Well, no, I think it would be much. Yes, but much worse, because in Libya, at least the population is relatively homogeneous. In religiously, I mean, they're Muslims overwhelmingly. In Syria, you've got strong Alawite, Christian, Shia, Druze minorities. And right now, this is a fight between Shia and Shia offshoots and Christians on the government side. I mean, and don't mistake, Christians aren't always good. I mean, I hate the genocide against them in the entire Middle East right now, but there are good Christians and bad Christians, just like there are good Muslims and bad Muslims. But anyway, one side on the Assad side, you've got all Syria's minorities. On the other side, you've got the Sunni Arabs, which are, you know the ones who, Al-Qaeda is a Sunni organization. Mm-hmm. And so, okay, if the Sunni Arabs win, the Free Syrian Army, they may mean well, but they don't have the tenacity, the grit that the Islamist terrorists do, and the Islamist terrorists are the most effective fighters on the side of the insurgents. So if we empower these guys, how do we then stop Syria from becoming a fundamentalist regime that is as anti-American as could be? Now, I'm not favoring Bashar al-Assad. He's a thug. He's a monster. He's backed by Iran. He's got Hezbollah on his side. But we've got to get over this American myth that there's always a good guy. In some fights, many places in the world, there are only bad guys. And it's a choice of bad guys if you have to make a choice. And in this case, we don't have to make a choice.
See, this
we don't...
This is the part of this
dog in this fight.
This is the part of this that I don't understand. Why is there such a push to get behind the rebels when Syria is, and the way that things go in Syria will not tilt the balance one way or the other in our favor necessarily?
Well, that's my point. And look, you know, I understand humanitarian concerns. There are 93,000 dead, of whom, by the way, only 150 are estimated to have been killed by chemical weapons.
150 people.
Mm-hmm. 150 people out of 93,000. So we're saying those 150 people are more important corpses than the other 93,000 because of how they were killed. I don't like chemical weapons. They're illegal. But you've got to weigh America's advantage. What's in this for us? And as far as the humanitarian concerns go, John, Syria's Sunni neighbors, the Turks are Sunnis, the Saudis are Sunnis, the Qataris and Gulf Arabs are Sunnis, they have F-15s, they have F-16s, they have modern weapons they bought from us. Why, if they want a no-fly zone, why don't they do it? Why do we have to put American aircraft flown by American pilots in the air to essentially fly close air support for Al-Qaeda and its allies? That makes no sense to me whatsoever. This horror could be stopped, or perhaps expanded, if the locals want. I mean, Saudi Arabia, they joke about us, about renting the U.S. military, and their attitude is always, let's you and him fight. They've got to step up themselves. If they want to rescue their Sunni Arab brethren, let them fight. It's not, again, it's not our fight. There are no good guys who have a chance of really winning. Nobody in Washington, whether the Obama administration or Senators McCain and Graham, who I really respect overall but who are wrong on this, none of them are telling me how it ends. What's the end state? Okay, we intervene. We give them weapons. We fly in those no-fly zone. Then what happens? How do you forge an outcome that's good for the United States and makes it worth the cost of intervention? And nobody is discussing that because they don't know how to do it.
So why do you think that the President of the United States is now pushing for us to get involved?
Well, you know, he's backed himself into a corner with his rhetoric. All this, you know, red line, red line, red line. You know, back in the 60s when I was growing up, there was a songwriter, a minor songwriter, but wrote some beautiful songs. It's called Tim Hardin. Died as a suicide very young. But one of the best songs he wrote was called Don't Make Promises That You Can't Keep. And Obama is a creature of rhetoric. He says things that sound good. He imagines that his charm will conquer all. But when you're dealing with Bashar Assad on one side and al-Qaeda allies on the other side, his charm falls short.
Well, here you have John McCain, according to CNN, saying that the options are not ideal, a response will not be easy, but doing nothing would be catastrophic.
Why? Why would it be catastrophic?
That's my question. Is it, what's the catastrophe? Yeah. It's Syria.
I mean, is it a catastrophe that Assad beats al-Qaeda?
Yeah. Or is it a catastrophe if you have a government that includes al-Qaeda elements taking over from Assad but will be shaky and fragile and under fire?
Yeah, and frankly, you know, these are all evil people, but I will take Assad over al-Qaeda.
What's that old slogan, Ralph? Better the devil we know than the devil we don't?
Yeah, and I don't like any of these people. They're all scum. They're murderers. They're butchers. But why should we support one butcher against another? And you know, actually,
strategically speaking, historically speaking, why support one butcher over another? Because that butcher represents a vital American interest. For instance,
right.
We helped some unsavory people during the Cold War. We were together with Stalin during the Second World War. A vital American interest was being served. I don't see the vital American interest being served by the rebels.
No, I don't either. Initially, the rebels were secular and moderate, but because we did nothing early on, because Obama fiddled and diddled and piddled, it allowed al-Qaeda to come in and essentially take over the movement. Now, there is a practical solution here, but it's a kind that the world's diplomats cannot bring themselves to see because they're in love with the lines on the map as they currently exist. A problem with Syria is a phony state. It was created in its present borders by the Brits and French at the Versailles Treaty conference almost 90 years ago, mm-hmm. or 90 years ago, and the deal was the British get the creation of this new state called Iraq, so as a consolation prize, France gets Syria as a sphere of influence and a mandate, and it doesn't work. The reason we're seeing this civil war is because the lines the French drew for Syria include this Sunni majority, but they include Shias, Alawites, Druze, Christians, and Kurds, and all of whom hate each other. Yeah. And the best of the bad, bad, bad solutions would be if an international movement, not the U.S. unilaterally, international movement, could partition Syria. There's a natural homeland for the Alawites, Christians, Druze, and others in the mountain cordillera along the Mediterranean coast, the city of Aleppo. That's their heartland. Mm-hmm. Damascus is traditionally a Sunni Arab city, and the east is traditionally Arab. The far northeast has a Kurdish population. It wouldn't be neat. There'd be population transfers, but you'd have some slight hope of long-term peace without genocide.
In other words, you'd have more natural borders.
Right, exactly. And again, you know, I don't like ethnic cleansing and population transfers, but it's better than genocide.
Yeah, no, that's a great way to put it. Great way to put it. And I think that you're right on. In fact, I think in slow motion, we might be seeing the same thing play out over time in Iraq, where natural borders are beginning to form because of the various constituencies within Iraq that are at war now.
Yeah, and that's absolutely true. That's what we are seeing. Kurdistan is becoming Kurdistan.
Yeah, up north.
The Sunnis, you know, own the western part of Iraq, Anbar and the surrounding provinces. But the fault line blurs where the Shia and Sunni Arabs come into contact. And the real question is, who gets Baghdad?